to episode 37 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski, and joining me, as always, Jeff Smith in Seattle once again. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
Jeff was, of course, out for a little visit last week. We got in some golf at some nice golf courses and had a good time. Happy to have you, Jeff.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, it was really fun, and finally I get to see where you're sitting now.
I'm sitting on my ass.
Well, I wasn't talking about your ass, but I was talking about your office.
That too. I'm sitting on a chair in my office. Ben Curtis has the dubious, perhaps, distinction of winning two tournaments that will not be around next year, capping off final round in the 84 Lumber Classic to walk away with a second PGA Tour win of the year. Probably no longer the worst player ever to win a major now that he's added at least two more PGA Tour wins to his resume. And once again, Chucky 3-6 Charles Howell III, falling back in the final round after having a share of the lead. He actually, you and I talked about that when we saw him near the first round lead, Jeff, but he actually held on and was in the final threesome, and yet, you know, finished three or four shots back yet again.
Yeah, well, you know, it was good to see Charles Howell up there. I thought it was good validation for Curtis, you know, to come in there, and now, of course, this is the second win this year. You know, he's made some great strides. You know, I think it certainly does validate that 2003 British Open win.
Neither of his wins, despite being in tournaments that won't be around next year, the Booz Allen Classic and now the 84 Lumber Classic, have been in tournaments where the field is extremely weak. It's not like the week before a major or things like that. You know, the Booz Allen had some decent players in it, including the defending champion Sergio Garcia. And, of course, right, the 84 Lumber Classic had John Daly, Charles Howell, of course, Vijay Singh, and a bunch of other decent or big names. Of course, some of them not there because the Ryder Cup is this week, but a decent field. It's not like he's winning opposite field events or anything like that. Certainly congratulations to Ben Curtis, and of course did so wearing Steelers colors, despite being a Browns fan, as his contract with the NFL requires that he kind of wear the home team colors that week. And Ian Poulter, fresh off not being picked as a Ryder Cup captain's pick, wins at the Madrid Masters, 369 on Sunday. Very good news for Ian Poulter. Of course, he will not be in the Ryder Cup, but kind of gets a little revenge. Hasn't had the best year on the PGA Tour, but placed pretty highly in several majors, including the U.S. Open, where I believe he was third.
So. Yeah, I remember seeing him at key moments throughout this season, and you know, he's a good player. And yeah, this is good validation for him. You know, obviously, I'm sure he'd like to win on this side of the pond, but that's a great win for him.
Darren Clarke, of course, finished hit at 7-under. Some speculated that perhaps the time he took away from golf to spend with his wife and to spend dealing with his wife's death would hurt him, but perhaps it hasn't. You know, sometimes maybe a good rest really helps you play well. I know, you know, a lot of guys play well in the spring after taking, you know, the winter off, because golf is, you know, they lose a lot of the swing toss and a lot of the complications, and they just go play golf, and it works for them. So it may work for Darren Clarke.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like a lot of us, he probably gets out on the golf course and he's able to, you know, not put his problems behind him, but kind of just focus on golf, allow the game to take his mind elsewhere, and maybe that's just the kind of setting he needs.
And in Ryder Cup news, perhaps Paul Casey may be coming into the Ryder Cup playing well. He won the HSBC match play, defeating Sean McKeel, of all people, who many thought were wondering why he's even in the field. Yet in his first round, he knocks out Tiger Woods. Pretty much every top seed lost in the first round. McKeel marches all the way through to the finals, where he meets Paul Casey and falls down to Paul Casey, who's on the Ryder Cup team. But a good week for Paul Casey, not a great week for Jim Furyk, Tiger Woods, and most of the other Ryder Cup members.
Casey beat a couple of key folks, Retief Goosen, Mike Weir, Colin Montgomery, and then, of course, he knocks off the guy who beat Tiger in the first round.
There have been some comments out there that have said that Tiger Woods, Jim Furyk, and them, it's good for them to have lost, because they can't. It's the HSBC match play is 36 holes a day for 4 days. So Tiger Woods playing, say, 120 holes over 4 days, he'd be awfully tired going into the Ryder Cup if he had played through that event and won or lost in the finals or something. So many think that it's good that he lost early. Gives him time to rest.
And well, gives him a little incentive to get out there and win, too. I mean, I'm sure that, you know how Tiger is. I mean, he's going to have a little bit to prove when he makes the Ryder Cup, a little bit more than he might have had to prove.
Very true also, and he'll be well-rested to prove it. So I'm okay with that. Of course, his win streak kind of comes to a close. It's a European Tour event, and B, it's not a stroke play event. So there will be some that will say, you know, his PGA Tour winning streak will continue or is continuing, and his stroke play win streak continues. But in Tiger's mind, his streak is over, so be it. Like I said, there are going to be some that will make an excuse for him. He's not one to make an excuse for himself. So,
well, let me be the first to make that excuse. I think history is going to look back on the PGA Tour record, and we may, even forget about that in a few years.
Very true. Excuse maker. Because it comes from the territory if you're a Seahawks fan, right? Michelle Wee, kind of getting tired of hearing her excuses. She finishes dead last again, shooting an 81 in the second round of the 84 Lumber Classic to follow up on her 77. The 81 is her worst round in 11 men's events. Should she be done playing the PGA Tour at this point?
Well, I think a lot of people are getting tired of watching her shoot, scores like that when we know that obviously she's capable of better things on the LPGA Tour. Of course, she's prevented from playing there any more than she is. I think a lot of people are kind of tired of it, but at the same time, as someone else pointed out, people are giving her exemptions. So she has the opportunity to play, and why wouldn't she play? She's given the chance to do it. She's getting her homework done, so why not?
Right. If she has nothing else to do that week, she's a professional golfer, so she has to go to try to do something,
Yeah, maybe even this is her way of
out there for sponsors.
Yeah, well, and maybe this is her way of really, learning how to fight. Obviously, she's not learning how to make cuts, and she's not going to learn how to win out on this tour, but it's giving her a chance to fight and to
But at compete. The same time, from one tee up, because they closed the back tees at Nemacolin Woodlands when the event's coming up. Last year I shot an 81 from one tee up, so I'm not trying to compare me to her, but she shot an 81. That's pretty bad. It's dead last yet again, second week in a row. I think to golf fans, the Michelle Wee saga is over as far as her on the men's tour. But to casual fans of sports, she's still interesting.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good observation. I mean, from a golf fan's perspective, we kind of wish that she would have taken Annika Sorenstam's approach and played one event, given it a shot, and then maybe gave it a rest for 6 months.
Especially since her first event was probably her best. I think she, at the Sony Open, she was within a stroke or two of making the cut. Really hasn't sniffed it since then, so I don't know. We may see Michelle Wee play more on the LPGA Tour next year as well. They're talking about extending, currently there's a privilege to LPGA Tour members where if you finish in the top 10 one week, you're automatically given an exemption or a spot in the next week's tournament. So, and they don't count against your 7 exemptions or whatever.
Right.
So they're currently thinking of extending that privilege to non-members. And Michelle Wee is a non-member. If she could finish third one week or whatever, she'd be given an exemption or a spot in the next week's tournament. That would allow her to play more than the 6 or 7 events into which she's currently allowed to play. She could play 3 weeks in a row if she finished, top 10 in two of them. So,
And if we use this year's performance on the LPGA Tour as any indication, I mean, she could just keep playing for all we know.
Right. And it's rare, though, that top golfers play so many weeks in a row. She's not going to play like 8 weeks in a row because she keeps finishing in the top 10. But she may get in that second one each time or something like that and play 10 to 12 to 14 events, perhaps. So maybe interesting to see. We'll be right back after this message from Titleist. Stay with us.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
Welcome back. We appreciate you sticking with us. In our forum topic this week, someone has brought up the question, is the Vardon Trophy important to Tiger Woods? There's some chance that he won't win it this year because he won't have the 60 rounds necessary to win the Vardon Trophy. Eric, I noticed you had some comments there. What's your take on that whole situation?
Tiger Woods has always said that if he plays good golf, winning tournaments, everything else will take care of itself. If you win, things will take care of itself. His place on the money list will take care of itself. His selection to Ryder Cup teams, player of the year, the scoring trophy, things like that will take care of themselves. I don't think that Tiger doesn't go out saying, I'm going to win the scoring trophy this year. Because you can win the scoring trophy and only win 2 tournaments in the year.
Right.
Tiger Woods cares about wins. That's his single focus, and I think that's it. That's all that matters to him. I don't think he's going to add an event to his schedule just to win the Vardon Trophy. And that's what he'd have to do. He's going to finish at 59 rounds for the year. He'd have to add the Funai Classic, which is an event he hasn't attended very often, although it was one of the events he won in 1997 when he first came out on the PGA Tour to get his card. But I don't think that it matters to him in the least. It'd be nice. It didn't happen because his dad passed away and he missed several months between the Masters and the US Open of not playing golf. Missed the cut at the US Open. If he had made the cut there, he would have been eligible because he would have had 61 rounds. But I don't think it's important to Tiger. I think winning is the only thing that matters to him. And he'll be like, oh, well, I didn't win it, but, you know, people obviously right. know who the better golfer was this year.
Yeah, I can't really add anything to that. I mean, obviously, Tiger's made it pretty clear that winning major championships and, you know, winning those key events that he enters, that's his thing. So, yep.
We'll be right back after this message, once again, from Titleist.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. NBC analyst Johnny Miller, who will be covering the Ryder Cup, I believe, kind of lays into the U.S. Ryder Cup team, calling it the worst team he's ever seen on paper. And he pretty much calls on Tom Lehman to set things up the way he, Johnny Miller, sees them. He says, I believe if he divides those up, speaking of the rookies, we're going to get creamed. I'm really concerned that Lehman uses the theory that we've got to use a good player with a not-so-experienced player. Basically, he says the rookies are terrible, and that splitting them up is the surest way to get our butts whipped in the Ryder Cup. So, I don't know, kind of a you know, Johnny being Johnny or what here? Does he have a point?
Well, you know, I mean, you look back, we've had some very experienced Ryder Cup members in the last few years. We haven't had a whole lot of success at the Ryder Cup, so I'm not really sure if that argument holds water. I mean, you know, these players that we all want to be on the Ryder Cup, like Couples and Love, you know, they're not there, and they haven't been playing up to that level. Some other guys have earned their way on, and I think that speaks for itself. You know, you've got to earn your way onto the Ryder Cup. Of course, a couple of guys got the pick, and rightfully so. I think Lehman was pretty scientific in his approach, and I think he's picked as best he can. Obviously, it's a bit of a crapshoot. It depends on how the players are playing that particular time, but I think these guys are going to go out there, play strong, and I think the rookies are going to have some incentive to play well. I mean, sure, there's going to be some jitters, but I think we're going to see these guys real fired up to play, excited. I think they're going to enjoy the team aspect of the Ryder Cup play.
Well, I do think he has a point, though, in that perhaps the rookie shouldn't be paired with some of the veterans, because I think all that can do is perhaps bring the veterans down in a way that the rookies are like, oh my goodness, I'm playing with Tiger Woods, I have to play so well. And Tiger Woods may feel as though he has to carry one of the rookies, or, you know, Jim Furyk or Phil Mickelson or whoever. Put two of the rookies together and they can really kind of say, Tom Lehman can kind of say, hey, nobody expects you to do anything, you have nothing to lose, go balls to the wall and play golf. And yeah. The two of them may feed off each other. They may say, hey, you know, I mean, they're both going to be nervous. They can communicate. They can play golf, and they can get done. I think if the rookies finish 500 in this Ryder Cup, that the rest of the strength of the U.S. team should be able to finish more than 500, and that ends up in a win for the U.S. team. So, and I think the rookies are more than capable of finishing 500. So I think I was one of the few people on our staff that picked the U.S. team to win this year. We'll get some comments on and predictions on the Ryder Cup later in the show, though. Phil Mickelson, after the Ryder Cup, may be done for the year. He pretty much gives up golf after the PGA Championship anyway, but he usually has played the Tour Championship in the year. He didn't last year, and probably won't be doing so this year. So, you know, he played at Firestone, hasn't played since then. We'll play the Ryder Cup, and then, poof, gone. You know, off into family land.
Right.
Again, we talked about last year, skipping the Tour Championship, kind of a slap in the face to fans who at least want to see him play against the best. And a field of 30, the top 30 on the PGA Tour, is by definition the best that year. So,
right.
I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks it's a little chickeny of Phil. You know, a lot of his wins come in weaker field events, events in which Tiger Woods and other top players aren't playing. Of course, his majors don't count there. He's won three of those, but, you know, the Bell Souths, the AT&Ts, etc. So part of me thinks it may be a little bit of a, I'd rather not play and, you know, finish 15th and whatever.
Well, you know, I think what we're looking at here, you know, Phil is a guy, he likes to take the end of the season off. And, you know, that might just be a personal choice on his part. One of the things that in the article that we'll link to, Tiger Woods says, but we need Phil to play well. We really do. He's one of the leaders of our team. And you're always looking for the leaders of your team to win points. Yeah, I think that's pretty neat. You know, I think maybe even Phil, if he can see outside of, you know, the 2 feet around him, you know, will appreciate the fact that, you know, Tiger Woods is relying on him to play well. And I think it's true. You know, Phil's got to step in there. Phil, as far as I can tell, has the best record in the Ryder Cup, actually, of all the veterans. Yeah. And so it will be important for him to play at that level.
Well, he kind of goes flat sometimes, and his last Ryder Cup was certainly eh. He was 0-5 several years ago in the President's Cup. He's pretty much been flat this year since the U.S. Open and his wonderful decision-making and shot-making on the 18th hole in the last round. So
yep.
I picked Phil Mickelson as my biggest disappointment this year. See if that pans out. Of course, I hope it's not true. But on the U.S. side, I had to go with him. I think the rookies will be okay, and that leaves my biggest concern with him. Carolyn Bivens, always our favorite gal, has denied a Q school application to 17-year-old Kieran Matharu. In her official letter of denial, Bivens stated, "I do not believe your record in professional golf competitions demonstrates you can compete at the highest level of women's professional golf at this time. I recommend you apply to qualify for the Duramed Futures Tour." Now, this is a lady. This is a young lady who is the reigning Ladies English Amateur Champion. She was a member of Great Britain and Ireland's Curtis Cup team. She's been a two-time Faldo Series Girls Champion. She's basically as highly ranked a young woman as you'll find. And yet, Bivens, I don't know if she's just unaware of these things. I mean, a Curtis Cup member? How do you not grant someone who's on the Curtis Cup team an exemption to Q school? She's not 18, so she had to ask for a special exemption.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, this kind of reflects Bivens' quirky approach to...
Quirky is being kind.
Yeah, quirky's being kind, but her quirky approach to people who haven't met the age requirement, again, you know, this really hurts. This really hurts the LPGA Tour when people like this aren't given a chance. I mean, we can look at Michelle Wee. Maybe we wouldn't have this conversation, this frustrating conversation about Michelle Wee shooting an 81 in her last PGA Tour event. If she'd been given some more latitude on the LPGA, we might have found some more confidence in Michelle Wee and a little momentum there, and also more attention, obviously much greater attention to the LPGA Tour. So this is really kind of in keeping with her wacky approach to allowing younger players on the LPGA Tour.
Right. I saw someone comment somewhere that maybe perhaps Bivens feels that maybe there are too many foreigners on the LPGA Tour and she can't market them the way she can, because marketing is one of her big, you know, her big ideas, that we need to better capitalize on the marketability of some of our players. And maybe she feels there are already too many people whose names she can't pronounce. I don't know. The idea was thrown out there, I saw this week. So next article we're going to link to here, 10 Commandments of Team Play. Just kind of an interesting thing to read while you're looking forward or while you're watching the Ryder Cup team. They include things like, thou shalt be compatible, thou shalt find the right partner for Tiger, thou shalt embrace and master foursomes, one of the things the U.S. team is perpetually sucky at, thou shalt not worry about style of play, thou shalt not surprise, thou shalt not insult, etc., etc. Just some interesting stuff to have a look at. Of course, many moons ago, Nick Faldo commented in Golf Digest, I believe, that it's very obvious, if you look at it, how European teams dominate in certain things, and it's all about the pairings or something like that, and they follow a formula. Of course, he could have been blowing smoke up people's butts or whatever, but I haven't seen anyone talk about that since he made those comments either, so... Ryder Cup, of course, Scott Raplank, he re-aggravated a rib injury he suffered in August while getting his upper back worked on by a chiropractor. So Tom Lehman said that perhaps Davis Love or someone may step in, but of course, Verplank and Lehman are saying that he's fine. Of course, Lehman also put Love and Corey Pavin on notice after Verplank suffered the injury to say, hey, we may need you last minute here if Scott can't go. I certainly hope Scott can go, but remains to be seen. And probably a good chance he'll play, but something to keep your eye on also. And in our last news here, John Hawkins talks about something we talked about earlier, in that perhaps it was a good thing maybe Tiger Woods and Jim Furyk were knocked out so quickly. Again, mostly because they'll get some extra rest. Playing 100 plus holes of golf in 4 days may not be the best way to prepare for Ryder Cup week, which is mentally and physically draining as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
Well, particularly when they've come off of some success, too. Woods, of course, 5 wins in a row, and that's mentally taxing. Furyk has just captured a win. So maybe they needed that little down, you know, to kind of, and then the rest, to just take a break and then come back ready to win again with some incentive to win.
And your Ryder Cup prediction, Jeff?
My Ryder Cup prediction, I see the United States edging out the Europeans.
You do? You're the only other one on the staff, I believe, to have predicted that. I, of course, predict a 14.5, 13.5 win for the U.S. team. It will be interesting to see. Cody predicts Europe 15, United States 13. Alan, the same score. Jonathan says Europe 16, United States 12. Jack says 15.5, 12.5, European team. So we'll be interesting to see. You know, certainly you and I have one side. So
what I do like is the fresh blood in the U.S. team. I think Wetterick, you know, Zach Johnson, he's a great player. I think J.J. Henry brings a lot of energy. Obviously, his, you know, some would say his putting isn't quite up to par. But I think, you know, he brings some young energy. And then Vaughn Taylor, of course, some good new blood there.
We'll look forward to that. Of course, the Ryder Cup is on this week. Starts on Friday. Festivities are already kicked off. So if you turn on the golf channel or whatever, if they're not showing infomercials, you'll probably hear about the Ryder Cup. But certainly tune in Friday through Sunday and check it out. We'll be back next week with our wrap-up of the Ryder Cup. Our predictions are out there. We both predict a U.S. team victory, so if we happen to be wrong, feel free to rub it in. But for Jeff Smith, this is Eric Brzezinski saying see you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.